Welcome to the ThinkComputer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 182. I am Derek, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and make some purchases there. We need money to put things on like this podcast, like everybody else. Production costs money. And that is a free way you can help us out. Just make your normal purchase, and Amazon slides a little bit of that purchase to us with no cost to you whatsoever. So, help us out that way if you can. With us today, as always, is Bob. What is up, Bob?
What's up, man? You know, Amazon Prime? Prime Day is coming up in like
2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's right.
I've already gotten emails about it, so... That's pretty exciting. That is besides like Black Friday, that is the day if you want an Amazon device to purchase it. Usually right. Their tablets, their streaming sticks, they're always at least 50% off, if not more. So just right. Keep that in mind.
They need their little midsummer sales kick, so yeah. Drop the prices for you.
Yeah, but yeah, man, we didn't do a podcast last week because I was insanely busy. I just got back from Hawaii, a nice little vacation/work trip with AMD and Gigabyte, and it was pretty awesome actually. They invited some media and some other partners out to do kind of a deep dive on Ryzen 3000 series and on the Gigabyte side to talk about X570 and what they're doing different on their motherboards, and it was great. Pretty much they went over all of their new boards that they'll be coming out with, which they're really awesome. I think Gigabyte is really stepping up with this launch. They're doing stuff that nobody else is doing right now, which kind of makes, you know, it's just like, you know how we saw the shift from, you know, Intel being the top dog to AMD now. I think Gigabyte's kind of pushing Asus, like, you know, like,
really,
yeah, there's some really interesting stuff coming. The one thing that I can say is that Gigabyte will have at launch, the only motherboard that is passively cooled. So no fan on the chipset, on the X570 chipset. And they were able to do that by obviously really great heat sinks, but the whole board essentially is a heat sink, which is really cool. If you are a fan of those, you know, if you've ever had like a high-end board that's heavy, you'll love their one board. It's really awesome. But Hawaii was great. And one thing I want to talk about, because it definitely has to be said, is that I flew United, and I actually, a few years ago, I flew United to Hong Kong, and the experience was really good. I heard nightmare stories about United, but that experience was actually really good, and it was a 17-hour flight. So, you know, when I booked everything, I was like, United, they did a good job for me on that long flight, and this is going to be a long flight going to Hawaii. So I was like, you know, it should be all right. Yeah. Well, on my way there... I wanted to get the Wi-Fi because I wanted to get work done, obviously, because it's an 8-hour flight. I flew from Pittsburgh to Chicago, Chicago to Honolulu, and I pay for the entire flight. It's $26.99, which that's robbery as it is. But if you want to get work done, that's what you got to do, right? I was looking to get work done, so it's going to pay for itself, I guess, right? So I buy the Wi-Fi. It works for about an hour. And then nothing.
Just shut off altogether.
Yeah, just didn't. And like, I'm a computer guy, so like, you know, I cleared, I flushed my DNS. Like, I did everything that you would, you know. And just wasn't working. So there goes $26.99. So I paid $26.99 for an hour of internet.
Well, you didn't get your money back?
Well, I put, there's a refund process which you have to go to, and it's still pending review right now for that.
Really?
Yeah. And then secondly, On the way back, Honolulu to Chicago, again, another 8-hour flight. I wasn't getting the Wi-Fi because I wasn't going to risk it. I didn't want to waste another $26. So this was a flight, and it seemed like on both of my long flights, actually in all my United flights, there's no like little TVs anymore. Like in the headrest in front of you anymore. It's all
long of a flight?
Yeah, it's all personal device entertainment. So they provide you personal device entertainment, which means you connect to the Wi-Fi and you don't have to pay for it. You just do it through their app. And I've flown on United flights where this works fine. Yeah. But on this flight, it did not work. And everybody was pissed. Because if you didn't have shows or games on your phone or laptop or tablet, you were stuck there for 8 hours with nothing to do.
So what's going on here? Did United forget to pay their Verizon bill or something?
I have no clue, but I mean, it did not work at all. Everybody was complaining. I mean, it was you know, because like you for that long of a flight, it's like for an hour flight.
Yeah, you gotta have something.
Yeah, even 2 hours. Luckily, I had shows pre-downloaded on my laptop, so I was okay. Yeah. But. Yeah,
did you sell tickets to come crowd around your laptop? And
I should have. But yeah, it was quite it's just not a good experience. You know, like you can kind of like say, oh, something messed up on the first flight, right? Like that happens. But you know, two flights within 2 days of each other.
I just blame United. I've had some really bad United experiences, especially recently, like just not happy whatsoever with their customer service.
Yeah, so not happy with United. I did get a bunch of miles, but still, I mean, I might just start. I've heard really good, people have always said really good things about Delta, but I don't know.
Delta, so I've flown like just about everybody and recently too. Delta's fine. There's nothing special about it, and it's not cheap.
Yeah.
United and American are a dumpster fire, both of them. Yeah. Completely. Southwest, honestly, is probably the best in America. We're talking about America, too. This is, you got to be specific with this. See, because I've heard that a lot of these airlines are completely different.
I consider abroad. Southwest a, like, mid-tier airline, right? Because you don't get to pick your seat, you know, but...
Well, unless you pay for it.
Well, you pay to be in line. You don't actually get to pick your seat. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, you very closely pay to have your seat. But so you're right. It's built to be more affordable. But honestly, Southwest is those flights go off flawlessly every time, though.
Yeah, I do agree, and I feel that their stewardess and the people that work for Southwest are much nicer people.
Yeah, their customer service is great.
Yeah, they're at least in my experience. I typically, like when we go to Vegas for CES, I typically fly Southwest because I bring two checked bags and that costs me nothing on Southwest.
Right.
You know, so yeah. So enough bitching about airlines, but I had to tell you guys this because I was, yeah. I mean, could you imagine like that long of a flight with nothing to do?
Dude, if you had nothing, like, I gotta be honest, that's the noobest move I've ever heard to show up to a flight with no alternative entertainment other than you were planning on the in-flight entertainment.
Like, I think a lot of people are because I don't feel that a lot of people are tech people like us. Like
rookie. No, that's so rookie.
You know, like...
Dude, book, magazine, something?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, so... But yeah, so since we took last week off, we'll talk about some stuff that we did put up on the site last week. First is the Gigabyte GeForce GTX 1660 Gaming OC 6G.
Jeez.
Another one of those very long names. And it's pretty much Gigabyte's highest tier, besides the Aorus line, it's our highest tier Gigabyte card for the 1660. It is slightly overclocked. It does have the WinForce 3X cooler on it, which makes it super cool. The fans, it's a three-fan solution, but those fans will turn off when it's idle. It doesn't get very hot at all. It's a great card overall in the 1660 series. If you're looking at a Gigabyte card, this is the one that I would highly recommend. It's just, it's like I said, it's the highest clocked one. You are going to get in. It's a 1660. It's a non-TI. So you're not going to expect like this great looking card. You still get RGB lighting. Like I said, it's still a full size card, which most 1660s aren't. So it feels like a premium card, right? And that's for a lot of people, especially people on a limited budget. They kind of like a lot of 1660s are pretty cheap. And they don't feel like a premium card. This does. And it does have a premium cooling solution on it. I would say that with the WinForce 3X cooler. Sadly, there is a full cover backplate, but it's plastic. It's not metal, obviously, to keep within cost. But I, like I said, it's a good card. A 1660, in my opinion, is a great 1080p card. It's going to do everything that you want. It's especially going to play esports titles at 1080p, even getting into 1440p. You know, higher spec AAA games, 1080 is fine. Getting into 1440, you're going to want to turn the settings down if you want over 60 FPS. But I, like I said, I think it's a good card overall. You know what I mean? And like I said, it's Gigabyte's best one. So like I said, if you're looking at the Gigabyte cards, this one is the best. It's only $10 over the MSRP of the 1662. So for 10 extra bucks, you're getting a custom cooling solution, RGB lighting. Again, fans that actually turn off. So I think for 10 bucks, I mean...
Yeah, no brainer.
Yeah, it's kind of a no brainer right there. The only thing, like I said, the backplate is plastic.
Which makes it sort of pointless.
Yeah. So, besides that, like I said, it's a no-brainer if you're looking at a Gigabyte card. Obviously, when you get into Aorus cards, they're going to be a little more expensive, but they're going to give you a little bit more features. They're going to look a little bit better, you know, a little bit higher clocked as well. But still, like I said, I like this card for kind of what it gives you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you want to say that it's like... I mean, by comparison, it's well priced, but like it's still expensive for like entry level. But
yeah, but we've talked about that gaming, so much. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it just is what it is now.
Yeah,
I guess. AMD is not helping us out there.
Yeah, yet, and I don't think they're gonna be. But you know what I mean?
No, it doesn't look like they can do it.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was about to take us way off topic. Let's stay with the reviews. I
mean, if you want to go off topic.
It was going to be like you think AMD should just sell off like what, like their graphics division?
No, because I think the next generation, we always say this.
Oh
right?
My gosh, but you just said they'll never do it.
Just not soon. It's just I think that they have the right idea to get some penetration. Mid-range is where it's at. That's where the most
money is.
Yeah, where that's where the most money is. That's where we're going to sell the most cards. And if they can disrupt that a little bit, that will give them something. And then maybe the next generation, they can go for the top dog.
That's all they've ever done. It's got them nowhere.
Yeah, so... yeah,
I'm just... I don't know. I have no faith. So I think it's better off just giving it its own, sell it to somebody that's solely what they're going to do. That's why Nvidia is Nvidia, I think, because that's what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean. So yeah, we have higher prices for the entry level, but I think, like I said, for this card, the Gigabyte card, yeah, it's, you know, yeah. Like I said, it's 10 bucks. It's $10 premium. That's not much to ask for what you're getting in return. I think that you're actually getting a deal with this because it is overclocked. It does have the custom cooling solution and it does have RGB lighting and it's a full size card. And I think that those are three things that a lot of people are, you know.
Yeah. No, it's a good looking card. Yeah. Yeah. And we just have to accept the price. That just is what it is.
Yeah. So on to two new mice. The first one I took a look at, they're both from Corsair. They announced these both on the same day. And this is the Night Sword RGB. We don't have a super long name with this one. And honestly, I feel that this is a follow-up to the Dark Core RGB from last year. It literally almost looks the same. But they've updated. They have a custom sensor in it now, which is it's a PixArt sensor. It's the PixArt PMW3391, which they developed with PixArt. So this is a custom sensor, an optical sensor, 18,000 DPI sensor. You can adjust it from 100 to 18,000 in single DPI steps. So a lot of customization there. The one thing that I like about this mouse that we haven't seen from mice in general in a while is that it has a weight system. We've saw that in the past and it kind of went away.
Yeah.
In gaming mice, and I think a weight system is great because, you know, different players, different styles, some like a really light mouse, some want a heavier mouse. So with this, You know, you get a customizable weight system, and the software actually will detect how much weight is in it and will tune the mouse based on that weight.
No way. That's pretty cool.
Which is really cool. And it's very accurate because I did test it. So you get three 2.8 gram weights and three 4.5 gram weights. They come in a little carrying case. But I actually like the mouse fully loaded. For me, it felt great fully loaded. So the base weight is 119 grams and you can go all the way up to 141 grams for the weight of the mouse. It does have that, I call it the lazy thumb rest.
For me, drag your thumb around on there.
Yeah, so it does have the lazy thumb rest, which I'm a huge fan of. I've used the Dark Core RGB and it has that. And it actually almost has the same button design too. So you have the, you know, your two main buttons, and then on the side they changed it a little bit. So you have two buttons on the top left of the mouse, and then you have a kind of a back and forward button, and then a very large button that would be considered a sniper button. But in this iteration, that sniper button is very hard to press for me. I don't have the largest hands, but it's just, for me, it's not placed well. I really have to move my hand all the way up to press it.
Way at the forward edge of your thumb?
Yeah. And the thing is to even press it, I have to move my whole hand up, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Readjust your entire grip.
Yeah. But for, if you're not going to use the sniper button, which you may not, it's not a big deal. It's a very comfortable mouse. They redesigned the coating on it, the rubberized coating. So it's a little bit different than the, which was on the Dark Core RGB. And I actually like it a lot better. You have that on sort of the palm of the mouse, that thumb rest, and on the right side as well. Just a great mouse. And they actually have, on these new mice too, they've redesigned the cabling. So it's a braided cable, but at the where it actually connects to the mouse is ultra like reinforced with plastic. It's almost like a plastic tubing that comes out of the front of the mouse. Because that's where your mouse cable is going to fail most of the time. So they've redesigned that. So it's a nice mouse overall. I think it's really good. Omron switches, that's kind of like a no-brainer. And yeah, it's a really great mouse. I gave it a 9 out of 10. It's $79.99, which kind of puts it in the, not crazy expensive, but it's a little on the higher end. But yeah, you're getting a lot of features here that you're not going to find in other mice that are around like the $50 to $60 range. You know, that sniper button, at least for me, was a little hard to press. And that was kind of my only bad thing I had to say about this mouse.
The textured cutaway on the rubber, it looks like it might keep your hand cool. It looks nice.
Yeah, so the one on the Dark Core, which came out last year, it wasn't as rubbery, and it was like little bumps, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
this is sort of like cut away. They like put rubberized texture, and it's cut away a little bit. It's much better in my opinion. So they basically revised that mouse. You know, new sensor, yeah, weights, better kind of like the better coating, and they redesigned the side button.
What style grip is it?
I guess you would say it's more palm? It's more of a palm style. Yeah.
Okay. It's palm sized.
Yeah, yeah. It's not overly large, if that, you know what I mean.
And the thumb, your lazy thumb tray, that's not removable?
It is not.
Okay. Oftentimes you see that removable.
Yeah, yeah, but it is not. But like I said, for me personally, I love that style because I guess I call myself a lazy grip. I call my grip the lazy grip.
Yeah, yeah, I guess the palm kind of is, because most of your hand, you just rest it on it.
Yeah, so that's kind of that. But like I said, for $80, I do think it's not overpriced, it's not underpriced, it's kind of just right there for me with all the features and everything like that. And then the second mouse that they took a look, or that I didn't take a look at, that Ryan took a look at, is their M55 RGB Pro, and he's going to tell us just a little bit about it.
So recently I took a look at one of Corsair's latest gaming mice, the Corsair M55 RGB Pro. The M55 RGB Pro is kind of Corsair's answer to other ambidextrous mice out on the market, meaning it is suited for both left-handed and right-handed gamers. It kind of has a shape that is symmetrical on each side. So if you look at it like from the top, you're going to have, or from the left or right side, you're going to have an identical shape and features, layout, buttons, everything like that on each side. There's really no difference between the two sides of the mouse, so it's great for lefties or right-handed gamers, which is really kind of a unique spot. You know, most mice are typically designed with right-handed gamers in mind. So being able to have all the features and options that a right-handed player has for a left-handed person is pretty awesome. You know, a lot of times left-handed players will either use kind of more of an OEM style mouse because they tend to be ambidextrous as well. They're just really kind of a basic shape. But it allows them to use a mouse that doesn't have the right-handed contours, which would feel kind of weird in your hand. So a couple of cool features about the M55 RGB Pro. It's got a single kind of plastic top to the body of the mouse. The left and right mouse buttons are built into the single top piece, and that top piece of plastic has a slightly textured feel to it. You'll find the similar texture on other Corsair mice. It's kind of a rough feel, not too rough like sandpaper or anything, but it gives you a good grip on the mouse for those fingers that you use. Like I said, the left and right sides are both the same. They both have a triangular kind of grip pattern that other Corsair mice have had. I typically use the Corsair Harpoon as my daily mouse, and it has that same textured feel, and I've really come to enjoy that that texture and feel there. It wears really well. It doesn't get sticky at all. I've had my Harpoon for 3 years and have had really no issues with the grip at all there, so I really like that. The two buttons, thumb buttons essentially, on the left or the right side, depending on how you have the mouse set up, are easy to access and click. The one thing I did find, I'm a right-handed gamer, so I use it with my right hand. I did notice every now and then that my ring finger on my right hand would kind of click the buttons accidentally on the right side of the mouse. Thankfully, in software, in IQ, which we'll kind of talk about in a minute, those buttons are disabled by default. So you don't have to worry about misclicks, but it was a little, distracting having those clicks happen when you weren't expecting them on that side of your hand. So just kind of something that I noticed in my use of the mouse. There are two RGB spots on the mouse at the back, under kind of where the palm of your hand rests, is the standard Corsair logo that has RGB, a single RGB LED underneath. And then on top, between the textured mouse wheel and the DPI button, there's a little glowing light up indicator there that you can kind of change the colors and as well. So nothing too special as far as lighting goes, but it does feature some RGB lighting. On the bottom of the mouse, there's just your typical PTFE slider pads, and then the sensor that's used in this mouse is a PixArt PAW3327. It's an optical sensor. It's got a DPI range between 200 and 12,400. You can adjust that in 100 DPI steps. So, you know, it's going to be pretty compatible with most players, most gamers. I really liked that the mouse came with a braided cable. Sometimes previous mice from Corsair at the lower end, like my Harpoon, had just a standard plasticky rubber cable. However, the M55 comes with a braided cable, which I really like. It also comes with Corsair's kind of newer USB plug. It's a lot smaller than some of their previous plugs that had kind of a bulky gray and black plastic to them. This smaller, hard black plastic just kind of takes up less room and doesn't make it, you know, every now and then with some Corsair components, you'd feel like you were flexing those USB ports a little bit. This is quite a bit smaller and doesn't take up as much room, which I actually really like. Like I mentioned earlier, Corsair's IQ is fully compatible with the mouse, so you've got your standard lighting profiles you can set for the mouse. You can set your DPI, change your pointer speed. You can adjust your DPI profiles on the mouse. Everything that you're accustomed to in IQ is essentially available for the M55 Pro RGB. In my usage, really, I used it kind of as a daily driver for a couple weeks. Everything seemed to work fine. Obviously, no issues there. You know, you're forward and back scrolling in your browsers with the buttons and the scroll wheel felt fine. I also played a little bit of Apex Legends, some Fortnite. Had no issues at all with the mouse, other than, again, just the kind of odd sensation of clicking those right-sided buttons with my ring finger on my right hand. But, I mean, I kind of got used to it, and just holding the mouse a little bit different kind of cleared that right up. So it's not really a downside or anything. Build quality of the mouse is great. You know, it's got a pretty solid feel to it. It's very lightweight as well, which I really like. I prefer a very light mouse. It just weighs 86 grams. I really enjoy that. You know, it's on the lower price point, so we're not going to have adjustable weights or anything like that. But at a price point of like $39.99, I can't really complain that it doesn't have adjustable weights or any other flashy features. But, you know, a mouse that's going to be compatible and work well for those that are left-handed or right-handed, it's really a pretty nice, solid mouse. Omron switches for good longevity there. I think they were rated for 50 million, I believe. You know, the RGB lighting isn't anything super fancy. You don't have a bunch of zones, but it, you know, it's a feature that just about every gaming mouse is going to have nowadays. So it being there is kind of standard there. Outside of that, it's a pretty basic mouse other than the ambidextrous design. But if you're a lefty that needs a new gaming mouse or wants to try something that isn't a right-handed mouse or is better outfitted than a standard OEM mouse, I would definitely recommend checking out the Corsair M55 RGB Pro.
All right. Thank you for that, Ryan. A little plug-in audio from him. And then finally, I took a look at a chair, and all three of us have actually done gaming chairs. And In all honesty, I mean, they're good, but they're not amazing. I think you would agree with that.
Yeah, they're about as far as in the whole grand scheme of office chairs, right? I'd say the ones I've used are sevens at best.
Yeah.
Because there's this entire tier where the price raises exponentially beyond that. But yeah, so, well, this chair is different, looks like.
Yeah, so Autonomous, we know Autonomous. They were the company that came out with the smart desk. This was the ultra affordable sit stand electronic lift desk. You know, it was $299, which beat the price of all the other ones that were over $1,000 at the time. They, you know, their whole thing is they want to bring out a product that offers the same features as the high end and keep the price cheap. You know,
so they do that with cheaper materials then? Or are they cutting out processes
They're cutting out the middleman. They're sourcing their own products. They're building everything themselves. Okay. You know, so they're doing this with office chairs now. And I took a look at their Ergo Chair 2. This is their second revision. So they fixed some things on the first revision. And this is not a gaming chair. This is an ergonomic chair. It's made to, of course, hold your body the right way, I would say. And honestly, I don't think I'm ever going to go back to a gaming chair. I love this chair. you know, you would compare the feature set of this chair to, you know, the Herman Millers and the really expensive chairs. While this, like you said, might not have the fit and finish of that, it offers the same feature set. And when it comes to chairs, like, feature set means like having lumbar support, having adjustments. Like, this chair, you can fully adjust to fit your body the way that you want. And it's not just like moving the back of it back. I mean, you can move the lumbar support up and down. You can adjust the tension that you actually lean back. The seat of the chair can be moved up and back to, you know, accommodate how you want to sit. It can also be angled back, like up and down, which is something you don't see on any chairs, really. The headrest is completely adjustable up and down, and you can angle it. The armrest, they can be moved up and down, back and forward, and can be angled in and out. This has everything. Like, you can really just, like, you know, you sit in the first time, you're like, oh, this is, you know, it's not ultra comfortable the first time you sit in it, but once you really learn the controls and kind of set it to how you want it, I don't want to go back to a gaming chair. Like, I just don't.
Interesting.
It's, you know,
because gaming chairs are really nice when you sit in them.
Yeah, so the one thing that this chair that I really like, especially it being summer and me being on the third floor and it's super hot, is that this is a mesh chair. So you don't have that big cushion, which might be more comfortable, possibly.
The cushion?
Yeah, but this is...
I kind of have always thought that.
This is breathable mesh, and I do like how it feels. Like I said, it's breathable, so if you're sitting on a computer for a long period of time, it's going to feel... like I said, it feels really good. I thought initially this isn't going to be that comfortable, but it's incredibly comfortable. I sit in this chair the way I should, or the way you're supposed to, whereas gaming chairs not all the time actually place you how you're supposed to be placed. Because the chair...
You kind of adapt yourself to the chair.
Yeah. So this chair is really made to, you know, seat you properly and everything like that. And like I said, it's... fully customizable, and there's so many options of the things that you can do, which I really like. And it doesn't have that super ultra expensive price point. It's $299, which is not that expensive for the feature set that you're getting. You can find mesh chairs online for cheaper than that, but most of them don't have any lumbar support, and secondly, they don't offer the feature set that you're going to get here. So I think it's really great. You can order it directly on their website. They have a bunch of different colors to choose from. And also, installation was very easy. Much easier than the gaming chairs that I've done. The instructions were easy to follow. They give you, I can't remember the gaming chairs. Like, the gaming chairs gave you an Allen wrench, I believe, maybe.
Yeah. Yep.
They give you like this very long one that makes it much easier to, and it has like a, I don't know what you want to call it.
Handle on it.
Yeah, it has like a handle on top, which makes it easier to screw in everything. This was much easier in my opinion to put together. So like I said, it's a really great chair. If you have a gaming chair, I don't say that this is necessarily worth upgrading, but if you have like a $50 to $100 crap chair from Walmart or, you know, any office store, this is definitely worth the upgrade. I think just in general, the health benefits of a, you know, sitting properly is going to pay off in the long run anyways. So definitely check out the review. Like I said, I was kind of skeptical when I got it, but after using it and sitting in it, it is the chair that I'll be using from, you know, for a while now.
I like the different colors they have look really sharp too.
Yeah, they've done a good job of, like, you know, this is really designed for like offices and things like that. So, but yeah, they have a bunch of different colors and everything too. So I think they offer 6 different colors with this chair. But they have a lot of awesome products. They have other chairs. They have, you know, their desks. And they're actually coming out with a in-home bike, like a Peloton, but not for $4,000. For, I believe it's only going to be $300. They're doing a lot of
that out.
I believe they also have luggage, or like smart luggage or something like that.
Hey, yeah, they got a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, so really cool company. Again, bringing these products to market that are very affordable, and that, you know, that most people can afford, or like, it's not $1,000 investment for a chair. It's not, you know, the desks, like I said, they start at, I believe, $299, which isn't expensive for a sit stand, you know, an automatic sit stand, motorized sit stand desk. So definitely check it out. Highly would recommend it. That is our reviews for the past 2 weeks, and we'll go into Case Mod Friday. We're only going to do one because we don't want to make this podcast ultra long. But I really wanted to do this one. Was from 2 weeks ago. This is actually a laptop mod, and we don't see that ever. I don't believe so.
Yeah, I mean, if you search, you can find it, but They're especially the in this day and age, we don't really see it too much.
Yeah, so this is done by Random Design. He does a lot of scratch builds, so he's really good at kind of creating like art, I would say. And that's kind of what this is. This is called Hunter Warrior. It's inspired by the movie Alita: Battle Angel. I just think this is cool. I mean, it looks like a piece from, you know, like a piece from a movie. I mean, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and
it's definitely got the, like, I was trying to picture where the motif was kind of from, because it's got like tribal designs and stuff. But if you've seen Alita, that's kind of like part of the theme, the different fighting robotics and stuff. So yeah, it definitely goes right with that theme. It's really cool. Mostly he modded like the back of the display. That's like where most of the modding takes place. Or the lid, I guess, would be the more accurate way to describe that. And he's just cool LEDs and fans and stuff in there, and mostly just the art and the design, like you said.
Yeah, I just think it's cool because, again, we don't see this hardly at all. And I think that, you know, again, this isn't going to help, I believe it's Acer. Like, it's not going to help Acer sell a laptop much. Like a case mod helps component people sell their product, right? You know, but I just think this is cool. I saw this and I was like, wow, like, I haven't seen something like this in a while. I know it's not like a crazy mod. Obviously, you're not going to take apart the inside of this. But I mean, he did add like LEDs on the lid that obviously weren't there. So I'm not sure how that all works or how he was able to.
Yeah, powering it is kind of that's much trickier than a desktop. Like when it comes down to like powering different things, because you got a limited supply.
Yeah, so that was like the only, and I mean, the lid is custom, you know, custom made and everything like that. I don't know if it was 3D printed or however he did it, but I like I said, this is like one of the coolest things I've seen recently, just for the fact that, like I said, you don't see it, and like I said, it's, I would love to have, like, I bust this out on the airplane. You know, that'd be pretty
everybody's
awesome.
Checking out your gear.
Yeah, for sure. This is definitely gonna bring you some attention. Definitely check that out. And if you're not into the laptop mods, of course, we have our full section of Case Mod Friday builds. And that'll bring us to our videos. I did do a video on the NZXT Hue 2 Ambient Kit. This is the lighting kit for the back of your monitor. It's a smart kit, so you can have it do some really cool ambient lighting features. We talked about it when I initially reviewed it, but this is the video, so this is really going to show you what it can do. I think the video turned out good, and like I said, I go through all the different modes and all the different things you can do with it, so check that video out. And then Ryan did his first video. He did a video on the HyperX Quadcast. It was a little shy in front of the video. I think we all are when we do stuff like that. I remember your first one. But what? Yes.
Dude, I was a pro right off the bat.
You were actually better than I thought you did your first time. But yeah,
that
so,
is not a compliment.
I mean, you know. But yeah, it takes a while. I mean, if you go back and look at my videos, they're not good either. So. So he took a look at the Quadcast, which of course is HyperX's gaming microphone. A cool video as well, so check those out, and we will have those in the show notes, so you can just click through and check those out. But let's get on to the news. We have some good stuff, some super news. If you've been kind of following everything, we've been hearing NVIDIA Super. What is this Super thing? But we have pretty much all of the details, although we will get full confirmation in about a week. So the Super Series itself, at least to start, will be made up of three cards, 2060, 2070, and 2080 Supers. And they're basically the chip above, but cut down. So the 2080 Super will be like a 2080 Ti silicon, but cut down. The 27 will be 2080 silicon, but cut down. The 2060 will be 2070 silicon, but cut down. The big things here, especially with the 2060, which I think but like out of all three, I think the 2060 is, you're getting 2 more gigabytes of VRAM.
That's a win.
That's a win. The 2080 Super is going to have faster GDDR6 instead of 14 gigabit, it's going to be 16 gigabit. for that.
Is it the same memory?
Yeah, it's 8 gigabytes
higher.
No, it's actually faster.
It actually has a faster through speed. Okay.
Yeah, it's faster. It's like faster die of the memory. Because when the 2080s initially came out, that wasn't really. It might have been available, but it wasn't like mass produced yet.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the gist of what they are really.
So do you think they're just poorly yielded TI chips?
I don't know.
Like these aren't. When we see companies do this sometimes, like this is a very random product line in a way.
I think
it's trying to make use of like parts that don't quite cut it for their other part, for the original part.
Well, the thing is too is I think one, this is a if AMD's 5700 XT is what they say it is, it's going to beat the 2070 and it's going to be cheaper. Right, and they need a card that they're gonna price close. That's gonna get better performance or something. They need like that in between, right?
So they don't lose all that market.
Yeah, so they don't lose that, or at least some of it, or whatever it may be. And they don't have a new chip coming, right? We won't see that till next year, whenever. So this is like what they kind of had to do, it's like I said, it doesn't make any sense. It does this show that Nvidia is scared? Like,
it shows that Nvidia is nervous, I think. And they've been nervous since they launched RTX, I feel.
I agree.
Because, like, if I'm remembering correctly, when we saw RTX, it really shouldn't have even been at CES. Like, we were not we did not think we'd see an Nvidia thing there necessarily. And then they jumped on it because there was the R8 coming out, right? Wasn't that? Or the R7?
I don't remember. But yeah. Yeah.
They've been very reactive in a way that isn't like counterpunching. It's like they're nervously dancing around. Like, I think it might be the desktop or the processor side of it, AMD, that has them nervous, that they think AMD is going to bust out something when they're kind of proven they don't have that ability with the GPU, but
yeah.
I think it still has Nvidia very nervous about what could come from AMD at this point.
I agree. I did want to go over pricing really quickly because it is the more interesting part. So the 2080 Super will be $799, which is the current price of the 2080 now, I believe. The 2070 Super will be $599. And then the 2060 Super, which is a little disappointing, is $429, not $349, which the 2060 is. I think that price is not. I don't like that price. They did add 2 more gigabytes of VRAM.
That's a huge amount of money for that, for 2 gigs.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting slightly the 20. You're getting tip, yeah, yeah. You're getting the 2070 cut down. I don't know.
It's $80.
Yeah. In all honesty, like I said, I think this is just like a stopgap. And it's just something to, you know, the dates, Nvidia did confirm this is from last week, but they confirmed that July 2nd, they will be announcing these officially. They already said that, well, they're going to be sharing the details. They already said that there's 3 cards. These are the 3. We already have pricing, but we don't have official pricing, but they're officially going to tell us everything on July 2nd. And then July 9th is supposedly when they're supposed to come out on shelf, like be available. Also July 9th is when the AIB cards can be announced. So Nvidia is going to announce the cards on July 2nd. AIB cards are going to be announced on the 9th, which is really weird that they're not being announced at the same time or not being like made or shown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a little odd. I don't know why they're doing that. There's no reason for it either. And then the final date is July 23rd, and that's when the 2080 will be available. Again, I don't know why they're not just putting them all out there. It doesn't make any sense.
Very random. Yeah.
But yeah, it's more of a stopgap than everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. New things from Nvidia. It kind of begs the question, when are we going to see a Titan level RTX card? That's something I'm more interested in. Will we see one? It seems like they do one regardless of what AMD does.
Yeah.
We usually see that. What do you think?
I don't know. I really haven't followed that. You know what I mean? I mean, there already is a Titan RTX card. Are you talking about a follow-up to
that? Yeah. Yeah. Like, we usually see something later on.
Yeah, I mean, just like a version 2 of the Titan RTX?
Yeah.
I honestly haven't heard a thing. I don't know. I mean, that card's $2,500 still.
Which is probably not going to change.
Yeah. And I think it does what it does, I guess. Because, I mean, any of these super cards, they're not, you know, like... Yeah. I don't know. I don't see them putting out another Titan card anytime soon.
Okay.
I think that's going to come with the next architecture. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I think these are just kind of like, we want to beat them in performance and like compete in price type of thing.
Yeah. Totally, totally different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So like I said, next week, which I believe that's next week, right? Yeah, next week, next Tuesday, I assume NVIDIA will hold some type of webcast or something and tell everybody about it. They'll probably go into detail on a little bit of what they're doing. And again, that's the second. The review embargo on the cards is the 9th. And that's when you'll also see Atom board partner cards as well. So all the custom cards, you won't see them. You won't hear about them until the 9th. So just keep that in mind if you're looking to buy. But again, we've also heard rumors of TI versions, like a 2080 TI Super 2 that might come later, like way later. So like I said, I'm not really excited about this. It doesn't really do anything for me. It doesn't get me excited. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, where would a Super TI part come from?
A cut like... down Titan? I don't know.
But what I mean, that's you're talking about a highly more expensive,
a cut down Titan with half the VRAM. I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like an unlikely thing.
Yeah, so I don't, like I said,
because like a 2080 Super TI would be a 2070. I don't know, like a 2070 Super TI would be a 2080 TI. I don't. That's when you're really blurring like performance categories. I don't know if I could see that happening.
This whole thing blurs performance categories because there's not going to be much of a price difference between a 2080 and a 2080 Super. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not going to be a big there's just not.
That's when you start to talk about like destroying your market value for the other part.
Yeah.
The older part.
Yeah. So
maybe price drop on some stuff, and then you can sell some 2080s, maybe. Huh?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. They don't believe in that, apparently.
Take $100 off, $200 off. Huh?
Yeah. So, moving on from GPU stuff, we have a very interesting thing that's happening over at Intel. Intel is so impressed with AMD. They have an internal employee-only portal called Circuit News, where they talk about, I guess, what's going on in the industry. And there's a new article in there titled AMD Competitive Profile, where we go toe-to-toe why they are resurgent, which chips of ours beat theirs. And it basically talks about AMD company history, and it talks about their growth lately. And it obviously shows that Intel's impressed by what AMD has done in the past few years. Yeah. And we actually have the entire article because somebody posted it on Reddit, the entire thing. So if you want to read it. And it talks about how what Intel's doing to compete against the upcoming products from AMD. And what's really interesting is we have the Reddit post link. You might want to go there, but people have posted the responses from the internal portal. Within Intel have responded, and they don't seem, the people at Intel don't feel that they're going to be able to compete anytime soon.
Interesting.
We have some of those comments at the bottom of the article if you want to look at them. You know, there's one, I'll read one really quickly. The secret sauce section of this article makes me cringe. There isn't one piece of evidence that makes me hopeful for Intel in the short term. And this is from an Intel employee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, like I said, we have like five or six comments down there. We have the link to the Reddit page if you want to go through it. I'm sure they're posting more as they come along. Because obviously, if you're not an Intel employee, you can't go to that portal and read them. but whoever's posting them on Reddit, we thank you. Because it's really interesting. because, you know, Intel is the big juggernaut, and Intel is the one who's not worried about other people. And it, this obviously shows that they are. You know what I mean? So yeah, so definitely check that out. Really interesting.
I want to take the point of view that of kind of hope for Intel from this, actually, because this moves them away from the camp where they're in denial. And when you're in a state of denial, you're not doing you believe you're still okay where you are, and you're not doing things to fix it. So this actually, for them, I think is a good thing that they're being open about the fact that they're not dominated anymore. They're not even the go-to part anymore, and that could be a turnaround point for them.
I agree. I think so. That you know, they're acknowledging it and saying, you know, we gotta step things up. So talking about them being worried about Ryzen 3000 series, which is basically what they're worried about. Yeah. It looks like they will be dropping pricing on their 9th gen processors from anywhere from 10 to 15%. That could amount to, you know, $25 to $75 off of these parts. Because 3000 series is going to come in at very aggressive price points, at least for the processors. Yeah, I mean that's good, right?
Yeah,
this is what we Intel wanted. Is known for never dropping pricing.
Well, they've never had to.
Yeah, so or they've never dropped pricing because of a competitor. They'll drop pricing when they have a new product line coming out.
Yeah, by like $20.
Yeah, so so yeah, we'll see.
We're gonna see Intel playing the price game now, maybe.
Yeah,
having to shoot for value.
Yeah, because again, we're not going to see a desktop 10 nanometer part till 2020, at least. So
yeah, which isn't crazy far away, but
I mean, yeah, but
10 nanometer is still like a generation behind. So
yeah,
oops.
Yeah, so they're, like I said, they're hopefully that like you said, that's part of fighting back, right? That's not them saying we don't need to price drop, we don't need to compete at price, we have our product. Like they're like, no, in all accounts the AMD parts will beat the Intel parts.
Them being frank and honest with themselves is the most important thing at this point.
Yeah,
for them to get back into the game, which I mean, if they can right now, we're in a point like we talked about on the last podcast about the pricing with AMD's boards and how crazy it is and how things are kind of switching. Like AMD can take that high price road now, basically, and they're not doing it with the processors yet, I would say, and they claim to not intend to, but they're in a position where they can.
Yeah.
If Intel doesn't start firing back, we're just going to switch sides where. I could see a switching sides where AMD becomes stagnant and rides on high pricing because they can.
Yeah.
So I would love to see Intel come back. All fanboyisms aside, I want to see them going blow for blow, you know, year to year.
That they, you know, Intel, not that they've been like great with enthusiasts, but like they haven't been like, they're just like the big corporate company, right? Like everybody had Intel parts, yes, but like, you know, make stuff for enthusiasts, like make a part that, you know, like AMD's like coming a
super overclocking part.
Yeah. Or like, you know, when is the last time you saw something like that? Right.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of have doled some stuff out to me. They just have a general attitude of like, it doesn't matter how much attention they show to the enthusiast area, like you're still going to buy our parts. That's how it's been.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're going to become a more down to earth company that is, you know, back in the trenches, talking with us and you know, seeing what we want and, you know, just being involved with things.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that happens. But,
and we saw the PC Per guys, right?
Yes.
Leave. They left, and to go work for Intel with that very purpose, right?
Yeah.
With,
yeah.
Community outreach.
But that was on the GPU side, just saying.
Oh, is it? I didn't realize that was specifically GPU.
Yeah. From what I know. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the whole thing. We don't want to get too much off topic, but the Intel GPU side, that's their whole thing, is they want to bring the community together to see what they want on the GPU side. Okay. You know, because they're building this whole GPU division, and they want it to be for enthusiasts and all that, because that's kind of what you need to do to come into that market. You can't just be a big, you know, can't be the right. Plain old Intel corporate. Why would you buy that over an AMD or an NVIDIA part currently? You know what I
mean? Yeah. Yeah. And GPU really sells to the enthusiasts. There's not the majority of the professional market doesn't really have an interest in GPU acceleration.
Correct. Correct. So going over to the AMD side, a little bit of news, which hopefully it's true, but I'm a little questionable on this one. reports are that AMD is working on a 64-core Threadripper chip for Q4 2019. AMD said that they will have a 7-nanometer Threadripper part, Threadripper parts coming. You know, they were initially set to be coming in Q3. That's likely not going to happen. Q4 is more than likely. But a 64-core, 128-thread part in the high-end desktop space is pretty crazy. AMD's highest core Threadripper part is the 32-core W299X. That's crazy. Knew your question. No, we don't need it.
Will it run Crysis? Do we have software that... Like, are the cores starting to outrun our software at this point?
Yes.
I don't know how tangential it can become, or if it has, I don't know how they write that for the threading, whether it will just utilize all the cores that you present it, or whether it has to be specifically written, like, send this work to this.
Yeah, I'm not specifically sure. I know nothing about how that works. I know that most... like we use Adobe products, like they're
right.
They will utilize all your cores. They will
currently.
So I think for most applications like that, yes. I don't think games. No, would you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess you could. I mean, I know people that do run Threadripper for gaming. I wouldn't suggest it because you're wasting a lot of money. But and energy for encoding and stuff like that. Yeah. Threadripper is a great platform.
Invaluable. Yeah.
Yeah. But this part is expected to be anywhere from $2,500 to $3,000. And if you think that's expensive, just keep in mind that Intel's 18 core chip is around $1,800 right now.
Yeah.
So it could be a great deal. And on Threadripper, you are getting 64 lanes, PCI Express lanes too. So if you're doing multi GPU encoding work and things like that, you know. But again, I don't know.
I believe it.
You think?
Yeah.
You think this wouldn't cannibalize their I guess not, because Epic's really server. I don't know.
Yeah. No. This is. It won't be. It won't have the. Yeah. It won't be server facing like Epic is. So, it's just gonna be their fastest mainstream parts. Two of them made it together, just like Threadripper was.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Or has been, I should say.
But one of the really interesting things, we have some leaked benchmarks. First, we have the 16-core the Ryzen 9 3950X.
Which is the fastest part, correct?
Yes. On the
fastest mainstream
part. Fastest mainstream part, 6-core, 32-thread. It was benchmarked in Geekbench 4. The single thread score was 5,868, and the multi-core was 61,072. To give you an idea of the performance, the Ryzen Threadripper 2950X, which is a 16-core part, scores 4,800 in single core, and 38,000 in multi-core. So this scored 61,000, so almost double that in multi-core.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they're both 16-core parts.
Oh, I thought we were... Nope,
yeah.
Nope. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, they're both 16-core parts. So a really, I mean, a really good improvement there. The $1,800 18-core Core i9-9980XE scores 5,300 points and 42,000 points. So again, beating that, which is very impressive. So you're beating an $1,800 part that's, and this is going to be, I believe, $799.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're not going to get the benefits of the high-end desktop chipset in the,
I mean, ish.
Yeah,
you're getting things that that high-end desktop doesn't even offer, though.
Yeah. Just to put it in perspective with like mainstream, a 9900K does score higher in single thread, around 6,200 points.
That's right. That's right.
And 31,000 in multi-thread. The single thread is because it does boost to 5 gigahertz. Yeah. This won't, but still, very impressive for a part that's under $1,000, basically beating two high-end desktop parts in this test.
Yeah, that's very good.
Shows
a lot of improvement in the single thread, and then that being carried over.
Yes. And then we have a Ryzen 5 3600 review. This is our 6-core 12 thread part. A Ryzen 5 part.
It's getting hard to keep the cores and threads
straight,
isn't it? Yeah. It's getting crazy now. We used to just be like, yep, this is a quad core and it has hyper-threading.
Yeah, so this is Ryzen 5 3600. This was a full review done on, El Chapuzu Informatica. I can't read it. But anyways, they ran it through a ton of tests. They tested directly against a Ryzen 7 2700X and a Core i9-9900K. It actually beats the Ryzen 7 2700X in many of the tests, which is very impressive because that's their flagship part currently, and this is a Ryzen 5 part.
Yeah.
So it does pretty good. We have all the benchmarks in our post you can check out, but it's pretty impressive. I mean, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for what it is,
it's only a $200 part.
Yeah.
6-core 12 thread, $200.
What's the cheapest board?
probably around 200.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about. But still, yeah, isn't terrible. That's pretty impressive. So, I mean, for performance over the previous generation, that's very impressive, actually. So you can check that out. We have their review linked as well. And then also, pricing was leaked on a Danish website. Mm. These are from a retailer it's from Danish krones to US dollars, and there's a 25% tax included in this pricing. So okay. Basically what I had to do was convert and then take 25% off. So this is the pricing that you're seeing. It's a little high. I don't think it's final pricing. I think this is what they had on the website. Or it's kind of close, I would say.
It's close. It could just be marked up.
It's a little, it's like the 3600X, it's supposed to be 199, it's 205, so, you know, with the 25% taken out. So it's very close to what it should be.
Yeah.
But if we go to the motherboards, they're not cheap. Like, the Gigabyte X570 Gaming X, which will be, like, one of their lower boards, is 190. The MSI MPG X570 Gaming Plus, which, again, one of their lower boards, again, 190.
which normally would have been like 125.
Yeah. Asus boards are very expensive.
They don't even have a board that's...
Yeah. They marked all their Asus boards at the same price.
Yeah, so those are all wrong.
Yeah, those might be wrong. But if but again, like I think the cheapest board that you're gonna find is gonna be like $200. Which again, you are getting PCI Express 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting very good board design now. You'll see a lot of the boards look really awesome.
Yeah, but we didn't even see Intel board pricing this expensive before. So this is just a this is just a market driving the price up, I think.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Just get used to this pricing, I guess, the same as everything else. And listen to me complain about it for the next all of eternity.
Yeah.
Old man complaining.
Well, talking about something that will it is a more value prop for Ryzen 3000 Series 2, and we actually were shown this at the event in Hawaii, is that every third gen Ryzen 7 and Ryzen 9 CPU will ship with their flagship Wraith Prism RGB cooler. So on the second generation Ryzen, the only processor that shipped with that was the flagship 2700X. But every Ryzen 7 and every Ryzen 9 will ship with that cooler, which
kind
is
of great. A no-brainer, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I think you need the cooling power of it too. It is a really good cooler. It looks cool. It has an RGB fan and RGB lighting, and they've updated, I guess, the firmware on it now, so it's now compatible with Razer Chroma. So all you have to
makes it actually usable.
So you know, you can sync it with Razer Chroma. If you have other Razer products or other Razer Chroma compatible products, you can match all your stuff now. So just like I said, you're getting more value. Again, you don't have to buy a cooler. When it comes to an Intel chip, you have to buy a cooler. So like I said, it's a great starting point if you're kind of strapped for cash. And if you, you know, want to upgrade down the line, it's a great way to go.
Yeah, but is the guy buying the Ryzen 7 really? I guess if it comes down to the dollars, maybe that saves you, gets you into the 7.
Well, yeah, that's
or
what
9. You know what I mean? That's not really the strapped for cash category, but maybe you need that just to complete your build.
Yeah, I think, like I said, the way that I see it is, like, the stock cooler will get me to build a system, and then, like, I get paid in 2 weeks, I'll get an AIO, or I'll get a better air cooler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if you're, like, this is, like, your first PC build, and maybe you only have a certain amount of money that gets you this without the cooler, wait till I get paid again, pay my rent, do all the things I need to do, then I'll get another cooler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it also ensures you have a cooler if you don't know what you're doing, so that's nice.
Yeah, and this one's easy to install. It's, you know.
Yeah.
So our last little piece of news. Actually, we have two. The one that I didn't really write an article on, but first is that out of nowhere, Mad Catz announced their Rat 8 Plus optical gaming mouse. It's to celebrate their 30th birthday, even though they pretty much went away for the most part.
They count the years in between, I guess.
Yeah, because I believe they did go bankrupt at one point.
They did, absolutely.
One, I love the Rat mice. I still have one. I have the Rat.
Does it work?
It does work. It's probably one of the mice I use the most. Not currently. I just have it in a box.
Yeah.
But at the time, I used it for years, and I got other mice to review and everything. But that was the one I used. It was the Rat MMO. Amazing mouse. This one's designed very much the same. I can't really tell how high quality it is, because whoever shot these, and this is what scares me too, is that these product shots are horrible. Pretty much, like, they're not very good.
Yeah. We've really, seen worse.
Yeah, we have seen worse, but these aren't very good, which is kind of scary. But I would just like this because, like I said, I use Rat mice and they are very comfortable. Like, they look crazy, but they're actually very comfortable. But sadly, they're only making 1,000 of these. Limited edition. I'd like to have one, but I don't even know how much they are. I don't know if it even says, but I assume there's a premium on these because they're only making 1,000.
Yeah, hopefully they're built, because their mice vary greatly. When we met with them, I think 2 years ago at CES, and we saw everything they relaunched with. There's a big difference in quality and feel between their lower to high end mice, which is true with every company, but like I think it's especially true with them.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like the high-end mice, they have a lot more metal built into them, and that just makes them feel so much better.
I agree. Yeah, so, 100%.
Hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, so they have a little YouTube video which you can check out. We have it in the article. But that's like I said, I love limited edition stuff, whether it's graphics cards or mice or whatever. So really cool.
I like the color scheme.
I do. It's kind of like a gunmetal or gray and like a...
kind of an off gold.
Yeah, like an off gold, kind of like a...
bronze. Towards bronze.
Yeah. But yeah, cool looking mouse there. And then our last little piece of news is that it is Steam Summer Sale.
Ooh.
Woo! nothing really crazy to talk about. I did check it. The entire Borderlands everything is $6. So that includes both all the Borderlands games plus all of the add-on packs, which normally would be like $100. It's $6. It's kind of a no-brainer if you want to play through Borderlands before Borderlands 3 comes out. Or if you never played it, it's just like it's $6. I haven't really looked at anything else, but a lot of games are at least 50% off.
Nice.
Yeah, so check it out. Good stuff. I usually buy two or three games during the summer sale. I'm not sure what I'm going to pick up, but hopefully something good goes on sale. I don't know what. But it's a great way to discover new games, too, because there are a lot of games that will be like 99 cents, and you just kind of pick them up. You don't know what they are. You just, like, the trailer looks cool, and you just pick them up. You might never play them. But I forget when it was, but I actually picked up during the summer sale a long time ago, maybe not that long, but maybe 3 or 4 years ago, was Terraria. And that was a fun game to play. I really like playing that game. So check out the summer sale. If you guys have any suggestions on what's on sale, if you know what's a good game, hit us up. And that brings us to what we have coming up next week. I have one thing listed here. I'll probably have a couple more reviews done, but I just haven't really figured out which reviews I'll be working on. But the first thing is a really cool product that basically will turn any M.2 drive or M.2 SSD that you have into a portable SSD. So we're coming to that point where some people might be upgrading their M.2. So you have a first gen, you know, NVMe drive, you're upgrading, or you might even, you know, coming up, you might be getting a PCI Express M.2. What are you going to do with that old M.2? You can make it a portable drive and a very fast portable drive too. This is a USB 3.1 Gen 2 enclosure. You basically install your M.2 in it and it's a portable drive. It's that simple. Not super expensive either. I think these are like $30. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, so it's very fast. It's the fastest portable SSD that I have, and I have the portable SSDs from SanDisk and everything like that. So if you install a fast M.2 on here, it's going to be very, very fast. Nice. So great for transferring files and things like that. And again, we'll talk about it next week on the podcast, obviously, once I finish my review, but very good. Very cool little product. And it's like all aluminum, which is pretty cool. So we come to the end of the podcast, and that's where we talk about if we watched anything or saw anything. Do you want me to start?
Anything?
Yeah, you can start. Go ahead.
All right. I listened to a podcast that actually came out in 2018, but someone made me aware of it last week. It's The End of the World with Josh Clark. Many of you probably have listened to it. It is pretty freaking good. It is super sciencey. He does a deep dive and like really sets everything up. It's similar to a lot of other kind of doom and gloom things that we see, but it's also a very realistic like kind of warning about like the potential risks that we're facing as a race of humans on our planet. And so he dives into like all kinds of topics like AI taking over, or let's see, like nuclear war, I thought was going to be one, but that really didn't like play a role in it. Cause it, I guess it's just, we can't, I didn't know this. Did you know that we can't really destroy the earth with nuclear weapons? Like,
I never really thought about it, but
like,
yeah.
I always thought that was like a thing that could happen, but like we can't, it's not likely that we could actually wipe everyone out. So I thought that was like going to be one, but it wasn't, like asteroids and black holes and stuff. And yeah, just, It was a good one. I listened to it like pretty much all the way straight through, and there's 10 episodes, so it's nice. It's super nerdy if that's what you're into.
Nice. I didn't have any in-flight entertainment or Wi-Fi, I pre-downloaded Chernobyl.
Nice.
The HBO miniseries. It's not it's based on the true story of Chernobyl, but it's obviously fictional. It's you know what I mean. But it's so good, and it really makes you understand what happened. And I really hope that they do more historical things like this, because it makes you really understand. And it's not like watching a documentary, right? Because at times, those, if a documentary is not done well, it's boring and it doesn't really, it's just this, you know, you're involved with the characters, you grow to like the characters and things like that, and it makes you understand what's being presented to you better, in my opinion. So if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. Really cool. And it really shows you what happened and how messed up it was. And it's something that happened. I mean, I was alive at the time. I believe it was, wait, when was it?
Is it? I thought it was older than that.
I think it was in, you know, it was in 82. No, it was in 82.
Was it?
Yeah. So 2 years before I was born. No. So it was something that happened.
It's 86.
Okay. 86. But
internet says 86.
Yeah, it's something that happened like kind of before my time of understanding any of that. Mm-hmm. But it's something that you've heard about, and you're like, you know, it was the abandoned place, and you know, but it just really goes into why and all of the kind of messed up stuff that happened when it happened, how the government tried to claim that it wasn't a big deal when. A very big deal.
What was the biggest deal?
Yeah, the biggest deal. You know, so very, like I said, highly recommended. I watched it on the plane. I watched the whole thing. Amazing. Nice. So yeah. So that, besides that, like I said, good little trip with AMD and Gigabyte, and got some really awesome information about Ryzen 3000 series and X570. And of course, when that stuff comes out, we'll be telling you guys all about that. But that is it, guys. We'll wrap things up here. As I always say, we have our full show notes page, so you can click through and, you know, check out all the articles and everything that we talked about. And if you're looking for us on your favorite podcasting app, website, whatever it may be, it's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next time, catch you guys later.